The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello and welcome to episode 262 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1, and I'd love to be able to say that we were coming to you from our usual haunts of the rush cutters frequented by, you know, former Formula 1 greats, or that we were at the famed Archant Towers, where we actually haven't been for a while, but truthfully, we're all sat at our computers in our homes, like many of you listening to us now, under the lockdown in isolation for most part. My name is Perry Hamilton, co-founder of the NRF1 podcast with my erstwhile colleague and friend Michael Bailey. Michael's not picking up the duties tonight. He is a very busy man with lots of things to talk about and lots of things to report on, I suppose, as rumours of football coming back. But I am joined tonight by some fantastic NRF1 stalwarts. We've got our resident Damon Hill fanboy, Rich Baxter. Rich, hello, how are you doing?
Hello, yeah, I'm good, thank you, good.
And, lovely stuff. Yeah,
we're not at the pub, but I have helped myself to a nice cold generic lager that we got for cheap at the shop, so I can still be in the same usual spirit that we are normally.
They're in spirit, I like that, like committing to it as much as you can. I'm also joined by the resident Italian. Do we call you Tifosi? Is that okay? It's nice to have you on, Alex, I have to say.
Thank you very much. No, you can call me Tifosi, although I'm not a Ferrari fan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just Alex, I mean. Good enough.
Yeah, Alessandra Fumagalli, to say it all the way through the podcast, probably a bit of a mouthful, so we'll stick with Alex.
Yeah.
But it's good, but it's nice, and it's wonderful to have an Italian on the show, because you guys who are out there are listening probably guessed it. We are here to talk about the big news that hit this week, which is Sebastian Vettel's impending departure from Ferrari at the end of this season, assuming that there is a season to be had. That's all still up in the air. I think, was it Rich you were saying, or someone said, I can't remember who it was, that you'd need at least 8 seasons for it to count as a season? 8 races, sorry, to count as a season?
Don't think I said that, but it might have been something I said. I forget stuff sometimes.
Okay. Well, I think someone quoted Ross Brawn as having said, you know, according to Ross Brawn, 8 races counts as a season, anything less than that, and I think they'll have to wipe the season away, which obviously nobody wants that to happen. So what we're going to do, we're going to have a little bit of a chat about Seb, and then we're going to talk about all the dominoes that fell into place after Seb made his announcement. We might get into a few of the reasons why, what we're going to be looking forward to when those seat shuffles actually settle down. And then we'll talk a little bit about our upcoming F1 Fridays that we're trying to get going, sharing our memories and our fun of F1 with you, our wonderful listeners. I was asked to note that our previous episode, episode 261, was actually titled See You on the Other Side, Sebastian. So it's entirely possible that we are the most prophetic Formula One podcasters in the world. And that's without Kyle, whose nickname was the Oracle. You know, this is the man who can see the future. So it's good to know. But I'm going to get straight into it now, and I'm going to come first to you, Alex. I'm just going to say, you know, what was your gut reaction when you saw that headline, when you heard that news, Seb Vettel's leaving Ferrari?
Well, I got to say that I actually thought my prediction was coming, you know, reality, becoming reality. For who don't know, who hasn't, you know, listened to a previous podcast, my prediction was Seb to leave Ferrari and Hamilton, you know, to do the swap. Sadly, obviously, that didn't happen. Although there were a lot of rumors around that, and I saw also Martin Brundle today recorded a video for YouTube, just, you know, kind of explaining why that didn't happen. But I think that to be fair, this is at the end of an era, and I actually believe this is for the good of Ferrari. Yes, Seb was experienced, very good, four-time world champion, but I don't think it took anything to Ferrari that didn't have before. You know, it never really won nothing at Ferrari. So I think it's good for that.
Okay, that's an absolutely spot on point. You know, a few races here and there, but no championships. You're quite right. Four-time world champion, at a young age as well, like still a lot of left in the tank. And then you've got Ferrari, you know, one of the most prestigious, successful Formula One teams of all time. Rich, will we look back on this period of, you know, the Seb Vettel Ferrari era as a period of underachieving?
It's difficult because whilst he hasn't won a championship, which was really the ultimate aim for him and the team, you have to say probably, you know, maybe not last season, but the two previous, he was the closest challenger to Hamilton. I mean, he had one season where it went really close, and Hamilton obviously towards the end stepped up a gear and took it. But it's a difficult one to call because he is a world champion. You know, no one's really quite matched Mercedes. I mean, even last year when Ferrari, they had a ridiculous car on the straights through the corners. They weren't really there at every track, obviously due to their aerodynamics and everything. But I mean, he's been one of the closest challenges for it. He's been running at the front still. He's had a few mistakes come in, so it's going to be interesting because it's the big question I find going forward is, you know, can he cut these mistakes out, or are they going to remain as, you know, basically part of his driving style?
Because, yeah, and there was a number of occasions last season, I think even the season before, even a couple of times where Seb's out front leading the race and something goes, you know, haywire in his head and he drives off the track, or he makes a stupid move, or he defends too hard or what have you. And yeah, you're right, you know, car's dominant in a straight line, could probably get through the corners okay. But if his head's not in it, you know, that's obviously a contributing factor, because my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong guys, but my understanding is that this departure, this divorce ultimately came around because Seb thought he was worth one figure and Ferrari thought he was worth quite another.
It was a very weird situation that they were in, but I totally agree with that.
So do you think that Ferrari are looking at the mental side of it from Sebastian and sort of saying, you know, look mate, you might be a great driver, but your head's just not in the game and we don't want to commit to that long term?
Potentially. I think, you know, they've got this, you know, young star in Leclerc who's there, who last year really led the team. I mean, the wins that he had in Monza, for example, and in Spa, where he soaked up some pressure and he just drove pretty much flawlessly. Okay, he made a couple of mistakes in Monza, but you know, he really showed his worth. And Vettel, of course, when he's making mistakes, it's maybe the team kind of just thought, well, you know what, Leclerc's proven to be the fan favourite. He won at Monza, the fans went crazy for him. You know, he's well liked around the paddock, isn't he? So maybe they just thought, this guy's the guy to take the team forward for the next 10 years.
And that's a great point, bringing up Charles Leclerc, because my next question was going to be, you know, how much do you think the presence and the emergence of Charles Leclerc has impacted on this decision for Ferrari to say, okay, Seb, you know, four-time world champion, bankable race winner in any given season, we're going to move on from you? Because Leclerc has become that emerging talent and he's marketable as well. So, I mean, Alex, how much of it do you think was Ferrari saying, actually, we're going to go with this young chap? And how much of it was Seb saying, I don't want to play second fiddle to this guy?
I think that Leclerc plays a big role in Vettel leaving Ferrari. You know, we all know, we've all seen all before Vettel leaving Red Bull, when he had Ricciardo was pushing, you know, and winning races. Obviously, you know, Leclerc is young, is talented, very talented. is still has to learn how to deal with pressure himself as well. A few mistakes there and there. But I think that Vettel clearly had Vettel had the discussion with Ferrari, say, I still want to be the main driver. Yeah, Leclerc is good. He's probably winning a bit more than me, but I'm the experienced one. And they probably, not even bother, I guess, replying to that. Going back 1 second to what Rich was saying as well, and you were saying as well earlier, the difference between a world champion that Lewis Hamilton is and Vettel is the mentality, the strong mentality, the strong work ethic that Hamilton has, and Vettel I don't think he has, because in the stress moment he always made mistakes, and we saw that last year in the previous one. That he's missing that mental strength to deal with stressful situations.
That's a great point. And how much do you think, because we have obviously we have our podcast group chat, our text chat, and one of our podcast guy who's in the chat, a guy called Adam, made the point of, Seb's got a young family. He potentially will be considering that when he makes this move. And, is the fire there? We saw what Nico Rosberg did. Nico Rosberg won that championship. And then he said, look, I haven't been able to be a father. I haven't been able to be a husband. I've got my goal. I've achieved what I wanted to achieve. I'm going to step away from the sport. Do you think there's an element of connected to those mental failure, that mental fatigue? Do you think having this younger family is playing into that at all?
I think it makes it is a big thing for the racing drivers in general, because it's the season, when it's a full season, takes a lot of their life. So there's a lot of time that's taken up. And I think trying to kind of balance that lifestyle of being able to be a husband, a father, and still be a racing driver and fulfill, all the commitments to the team and what you're being paid for. I think it's a real challenge. I think if he was to step away, I think he would have announced it now, as if he is retiring at the end of the season, just leaving Ferrari.
Do you think he might test the waters, might see what's out there, and then if someone says, yeah, we'll have you and here's a reasonable offer, he'll say, oh yes, thank you. But if there's nothing out there that takes his fancy, rather than saying, hey, I'm not getting the offers that I think I'm worth, I'm actually going to retire. Rather than saying, I'm not getting the offers, he could easily say, actually, guys, do you know what? I've thought about it. I've taken my time. I'm going to step away. It's not for me anymore. Do you think he might save face? I think we could still get a Seb Vettel retirement announcement, later in the year.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd kind of be surprised. I think he's still got enough to offer to stay on the grid and not retire. But yeah, I'd be surprised if he retired. I wouldn't want to see him go yet. I think he has plenty to offer. But I mean, maybe he'll take a year out, do an Alonso, just take a year out and hope to come back at a different time.
Well, okay, so let's talk about that. Where do we think are potential landing spots for Sebastian Vettel? We know his seat's already taken. We'll come on to talk about that in a minute. We know that the seat that has left open has been taken, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But where do we think ideal, dream scenario, where's the best place that Sebastian Vettel could realistically land on the grid for either, for next year?
There's a lot of talk, obviously, because there's a seat open at Renault. But I really think Mercedes could be having a sniff around him. We've seen over the last couple of years, Hamilton and Vettel get along well. Mercedes don't really seem to have any trouble saying to their drivers, you can race, you're both equal. Whoever's in the lead basically gets first call and stuff. And
well, now it's very easy to say to your drivers, you're both equal, when you can easily see on paper that there is a gulf between them. I mean, reasonably, they're in the same car, but there's no way that Valtteri Bottas is a competitive driver to Lewis Hamilton. I don't mean disrespect to Valtteri Bottas with that, race winner and what have you, but at the same time, no one could reasonably put those two next to each other and say, yeah, they're comparable drivers. Seb's in a different class to Valtteri Bottas, and they may get on well, but to put two of the most, reigning world champions that you've got, most reigns between them, on the same team, I think it'd be great for Mercedes, because you know they're a German team by ownership anyway, and then you'd have one of the more successful German drivers of the last 10 years. So I can absolutely see your point, but I think the idea that Mercedes happily let their guys race, I think when you've got two guys that could actually race and competitively race more, I think that might shift.
But then it's like what they had with Nico Rosberg and Hamilton, obviously, recently. I mean, that was a bit of a different situation because obviously Rosberg had been at the team for so long and everything. But I mean, the way those two went for the season, they still drove well. But they obviously had to warn them quite a few times to say. it's a difficult one to call.
Okay, sorry, we're getting a little bit of background interference there from Alex, so apologies for that.
Sorry.
No, you're fine, mate, that's all right. We just want to make sure that we're not listening in on anything we shouldn't be.
That was a gin delivery.
Well, that's the most important thing then, that's all right. That's all we need to know. Okay, so Mercedes having a sniff around, but let's reasonably say that Lewis puts his foot down and says, hey, I'm your number one driver. I'm the guy in charge. I'm bringing you the championships. I'm bringing you the money. I'm bringing you the sponsors. I like him personally, like him as a bloke. I don't want him on my team, especially when you consider the brake checking incident in Baku and things like that. Let's say Lewis vetoes it. Where else do you think that A, might be interested in Seb, but actually B, that Seb might bring value to?
Hard question, I would say. Very interesting debate that could be.
Well, let's rule out the two Red Bull teams, because he's not going to be going back there. I think they're very happy that he's, you know, what a Toro Rosso. They're not going to be Toro Rosso next year, are they? Or
AlphaTauri.
AlphaTauri, that's it. So
I still don't think it would. No. We can rule them out as well.
Yeah, so that's still the feeder team. You know, fancy new name, doesn't matter. They're still the feeder team. They're still the second team. And then Red Bull, they're really set with who they've got. I think they're really happy there. I don't think they'd want to take that step backwards. Renault, I think you made the point, they're going to have an open space, and I think there's potentially an option there. So that's, you know, that's good. That's really positive. But do we think Renault are going to be competitive enough to attract someone like Vettel?
I personally don't, for the simple fact that Renault next year, they're only going to produce engines for themselves, and we know that Renault engines are not the greatest. And I personally don't think they're going to be strong enough to give Vettel what he needs. I don't see anywhere else really that could potentially give Vettel what he wants for, you know, a winning car. I don't really see that anywhere else, you have to be honest.
Okay, so we don't, not like a Haas, we don't think, because we know they kind of regressed.
Nah, I don't see Haas being anywhere better than he was last year. They have a lot of different things to sort out before they can probably get to a driver like Seb. That's obviously my personal view, but I think that Haas, they're getting to a point where McLaren was a few years ago.
Okay. And we don't think that there's a team out there where Seb signs on and it becomes very much like a Lewis with Mercedes. You know, when Lewis signed with Mercedes, there wasn't anyone there going, oh, Mercedes are going to be the team to beat. And then suddenly with the regulation changes, they hit it great with their development, they hit it great with their engine, and they have been the dominant team since Lewis signed with them. Is there a team out there that we think is ready to make the leap that Seb might, you know, be eyeing up, or are those seats already filled?
I think one team to definitely watch is, of course, it will sound strange, but Racing Point. Because, of course, they are rebranding to Aston Martin.
Yes, of course.
Now, if Aston Martin, being the worldwide supercar manufacturer that they are, they might want to say, we want a world champion driver in our team, you know, in our car. In which case they may look to Vettel for it.
And of course, being a lower tier team, being a team that's further down the grid, the money potentially that the sponsorship would bring by having Sebastian Vettel, you know, he's not the most marketable guy, but his name has value. And so if you can turn around and say, hey, we've got Seb Vettel on our team, people want to be associated with that. And I know, you know, probably not going to be wanting for money at the moment, but every little helps when it comes to Formula One because it's an expensive business.
Absolutely.
True. Yeah. I mean, we know that Mr. Stroll is a businessman more than a Formula One team owner. So
that's a
good shout. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'm just going to put this one out there. So what is the likelihood, on a, let's say in a percentage out of 100%, 100% being, you know, it's definitely going to happen, 0%, it never happens in a million years. What's the potential that Formula E, some team owner in Formula E, comes out of nowhere, thinks Seb Vettel's out of a contract, think of the name recognition, think of the brand recognition, think what this could do for Formula E as a sport, and Formula E goes out and makes a huge financial offer to Seb Vettel to drive for one of their teams. What do we reckon? What percentage of that happens?
It's probably, it's going to take a lot of money. I'd have it as low as somewhere around the highest as 10%.
You reckon?
Yeah.
I go much higher than that. I would go a good 40%.
You see, I think I agree.
Yeah, there are a lot of money from Formula E, much more than we think. Obviously, it's not as televised or publicized as a Formula One, but there are a lot of money involved, and you know, big teams. You know, Mercedes. At the end of the day, they are in there as well. I personally feel like they're gonna a good 40%. You know, Nico Rosberg has it. I think he has it on his own team. So potentially, you know, German to German, good call.
And you say it's not hugely televised as much, or it's not watched as much. I bet you they'd get a rating spike if Seb Vettel was lining up on their grid.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that would be something else to think about there. But I just, and also there's the competitive element of maybe Seb's in his own head a bit much. Maybe he's thinking, I'm getting walloped up. I'm making the mistakes. He must look at Formula E's grid. He must look at that field and think there isn't a single one of them I couldn't whoop. Now, the idea that if they were to come to him and say, here's a big chunk of cash, and he looks at the rest of the field and goes, I could probably be world champion there. That's got to be appealing though, hasn't it?
Yeah, this is the thing where it's just my personal opinion on Formula E, but I've said it before, and I don't want this to sound horrible, but I always find it as basically the failed Formula One driver sport.
Right.
So it's you look at who's in the lineup of the teams, and I mean, you had Felipe Massa. Okay, he wasn't a failed Formula One driver, but he dropped out of Formula One. He wanted to carry on racing. He went there. They had Jarno Trulli racing in there. I think in their first or second season.
Stoffel.
Where they had it. Yeah, Van Dorn's in there.
Don't forget him.
There was several other drivers who could have raced, and you know, arguably missed their chance. You know, like John Eric Verne, he had a good run in Formula One, but he never got his break, and he dropped down, and ended up in Formula E. I just feel surprised if Vettel, being a four-time world champion, would go there.
Yeah, undoubtedly, I think there's a market for him in Formula One. It's just whether it's the market he wants. That's the question, isn't it?
Yeah.
But just a quick thought.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that with the way the world is going, the world is moving obviously towards electric cars and all that jazz, don't you think that Formula E one day is going to be the new Formula One?
Oh, how long you got? that's a huge question, Alex. And I think Formula E would like it to be. I don't think there's any question of that. I think that was what would be Formula E's goal. But I think Formula One isn't going anywhere, especially when you've got the hybrid engines coming through, and the future may be electric, but it's a long way off. But I would imagine that Formula One, Liberty Media ownership, that they have Formula E or electric cars is certainly in their maybe medium or long-term planning. I think maybe you could potentially look at a merger. Maybe a combining, but at the moment, I think it's still too fledgling. And I think, Rich, your point about, you know, it's a failed Formula One drivers sport. Whether or not that's true, it's the perception, and perception is reality. So if that's how fans see it, That's what it is. And that's, you know, that's the killer, really, isn't it? Because everyone who looks at it and goes, ah, oh, well, it's just failed Formula One drivers. What's the point in watching that when I could just watch Formula One?
Yeah. I mean, I know Formula One, for example, they're introducing plans to be carbon neutral and everything. And I think it was over the next not many years. I can't remember the exact figure, but it wasn't that many years. And they basically found a way I think it was a company in Canada or something, and found a way where they can take the CO2 out of the atmosphere, and then they can do something with it which creates like a fake petrol, basically, which they can then use to power you know, petroleum vehicles, basically. And it
you
makes
said
the
basically
whole thing
there, Rich, and nothing about that science sounds basic to me, but I will leave the chemistry to you, my friend.
So they take stuff out of the sky, somehow turn it into fuel, and it makes it carbon neutral. That's what I've got of it.
That's all we know. If anyone out there is a biochemist or a scientific person, please let us know. Is it a scientific person? I don't even know the names. I don't even know the names of the jobs. I don't know what I'm doing. Okay. Right, and same question on percentages, but for IndyCar. What do you reckon? So Alex reckons there's less chance that Sebastian Vettel goes to IndyCar than goes to Formula E.
More risky. I think IndyCar is riskier than Formula One. I personally feel.
Okay. Rich, what do you reckon?
I'd be shocked if it went to IndyCar. Let's go as low as 5%.
As low as 5? Okay, so yeah, right. And you agree, less chance.
I really would be surprised if he was to go to IndyCar. I think Alonso would have something to say about him coming onto his turf.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
The Jeff Wyler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Wyler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Well, speaking of Alonso won his world championships with Renault, and Renault look like they're going to have a seat open, because Seb leaving Ferrari means Carlos Sainz has gone to Ferrari, which means Daniel Ricciardo goes to McLaren to fill Sainz's empty seat, which means Renault has an empty seat. Do we think Alonso comes back to fill that seat?
Well, this is something... I think back in 2015, 16 or so, we were talking about it, Ped, and we were saying Renault were moving forward, and I think both of us agreed we wouldn't be surprised to see Alonso back in that team.
We did, yes, crikey. Good memory, mate, well done.
Yes.
Several years ago.
Yeah.
But obviously, I was thinking about this actually because the team has obviously changed a lot since he drove for them. Flavio Briatore has gone, he's not part of the team. Does he still have connections there or does he not? I really don't know. And if he was to come back, would he try and come in at McLaren, where obviously he's been driving the last few years?
But McLaren don't have a seat available anymore, do they?
No.
That's the thing. So let's just break it down a little bit more, and let's talk about Carlos Sainz. So Carlos Sainz, as soon as this news that Seb Vettel was leaving Ferrari hit, immediately the speculation was, I think one of the guys in our group straight away was like, that's Sainz. Sainz is going to be in that seat. So it's happened. He's there. He's been agreed. What do we think about that? Alex, what do you reckon to that? Is that a good thing for Sainz, and is it a good thing for Ferrari?
I would say both.
Yeah.
Sainz has he did a very good season with McLaren, obviously, last season. I think he's still young. He's not, you know, over his peak age yet. He shows consistency with a car that is developing and is getting better and better with every race. Obviously, Ferrari is a winning car. We know that if Ferrari gets the correct weekend, could be a very good car. And, you know, I believe that he has now 5 years' experience in Formula 1, Carlos Sainz, am I right?
Roughly, I'd have to look
roughly,
it up.
Yeah, I believe it's around 5 years. Anyway, and, you know, I personally feel like he's a good call for both of them. So, brings some level of experience that Charles Leclerc doesn't have. At the same time, Ferrari will help him develop and potentially win more races.
Do you think he's going to be allowed to push Leclerc, or do you think he's going there to be, you know, clear number two, Leclerc's our guy, he's our future star, that's who we're going to
I don't think he's going to be a number two as such, but it's going to be more like of a development persona in there. So he's going to be the one that develops more the car, and when Leclerc probably will win more races. That's how I see it, more than just a second driver. Like, if I think a second driver, I think Bottas, more of a second driver. But with Sainz, I see more of a developer than just a second driver.
And do you think that was something that Seb wasn't doing for
yeah.
the team?
Yeah. So I don't think Seb had the capacity mentally, and I think he was a proud man in there, and he wanted to be, you know, the main driver. He wanted to be the one that was winning and developing and doing, because that probably what was happening with when Raikkonen was there, because Raikkonen, we know, is there, he enjoys Formula One, but he doesn't really probably want to know or do as much. But with Leclerc, I believe that changed a lot. So he probably got too much involved for Vettel.
Okay. And Rich, you know, there's a pressure that comes with putting on that red jumpsuit and driving that scarlet car, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously the fans expect you to be fast straight away. I mean, Ferrari, they haven't really had, you have to say, any slow drivers drive for them. It obviously sounds a stupid thing to say when they're in Formula 1. But obviously, as an example, like Gasly in Red Bull last year, he wasn't slow exactly, but he struggled at the start. I mean, the first race, I think he was down in 17th or 18th for Red Bull, which is, you know, not what they wanted. I think
you'd have to go back to when Massa had his injury and they brought in Pedro De La Rosa. Was probably the slowest a Ferrari driver's been in a long time.
Yeah, they had some slow drivers because they got Fisichella in that car as well for a time.
That's right,
and, I mean it's like you say, that's obviously not what they want. And there's the pressure. It seems a strange move in several ways because I mean I'm surprised McLaren have let their good driver partnership break up, and kind of surprised that McLaren would let one of their drivers go to a rival, but obviously they had a replacement in mind anyway, and they knew they could get, you know, Ricciardo to step in and replace Sainz. But I mean, for Sainz as well, he's got to go there, and we were talking about it earlier on the podcast group, and I was kind of surprised he signed for them because I just think Ferrari are going to have everything behind Leclerc. You know, he's moving there and you think he might have been told different, but he's got to expect that he's going to have to play the backup role sometimes. And as a Formula One driver, you don't want to do that.
Do you not want to do that even though it means driving for possibly the most iconic Formula One team of all time? Because you could think, well, they'll tell me I'm the number two, but you back yourself in those situations, don't you? You would say, you tell me I'm a number two, I'll sign your contract, mate. And when I get there, I will show you and I will put everyone else in my dust and I will win you races and then you'll have to pay attention to me. Isn't that the mentality, though?
Yeah, he has to take that mentality if he's been told he's going to be number two. But then obviously it comes down to as well, I suppose you've got to say, why not be in a different team if who could potentially get the podiums as well. I mean, McLaren got a podium last year. If their car improves, they could be on a par with Ferrari in the next couple of years, and he could be, you know, he could have been leading McLaren, for example.
Well, there's a big difference between podiums and wins, which brings me to my last question before we move on to talk about some of the other moves around. Is, yes or no, is Carlos Sainz a race winner in his first season with Ferrari? Yes or no?
Strong yes.
Strong yes from Alex. Bold. I like it. Mark that in your diary, because he was right about Seb, you know. So if you guys want to put a bet on that now, I'm not advocating it. But if you did, let us know, and let us know if it comes in. Rich, what do you reckon? Yes or no? Race winner in his first season with Ferrari, Carlos Sainz.
I will also say yes.
Nice. Optimism for Carlos. I love it.
I think he's, you know, he's a brilliant driver. He's shown that, and I think he's got the capability to win. I mean, just with, again, going back to last year with McLaren, what was the stat? He finished with more points than any other constructor or something like that. You know, any other lower...
Best of the rest. Yeah.
And that's quite a remarkable stat. And I mean, if he can do the same for Ferrari, then who knows?
So he's consistent. We know that. And as long as the car's consistent... So if the car's consistent and the car's fast and the driver's consistent and the driver's fast, in theory, we should be seeing some top steps to the podium, shouldn't we?
Yeah, it'd be great to see that.
It'd be exciting to watch. So, another exciting driver that we know is quick has moved to fill Carlos Sainz's empty seat at McLaren in Daniel Ricciardo. Is this a good move for Danny Ric? I mean, McLaren were emerging and Renault seemed to be taking that backwards step, but we know Renault is a fairly well-funded team. McLaren... We never really know, you know, how much is being thrown into that team. But do you think this is a smart move for Danny Ric?
I think so. I think he's. I think he can perform in that team, and I mean, he can lead it forward. I mean, obviously Lando's there. We know he's good. We like him. Brilliant driver. But obviously, he's still young, and he's probably got a bit to learn. But it's quite a dangerous move, you'd have to say, because if he goes to McLaren and he doesn't have a great season and Lando really outperforms him, McLaren and the rest of the other teams could turn around and say, well, you know, what's the fuss about this guy? Okay, he's won races, but I mean, it's been a while since we've seen him up there. Obviously, this year would be his second with Renault. So, I mean, he's got to go to McLaren and perform.
Well, he's got to go to McLaren and perform, not just for him, not just for McLaren, but for Formula One. I mean, Formula One have taken great strides to market Danny Ric as almost the face of the sport. If you certainly watched the first season of Drive to Survive on Netflix, and no, Netflix don't pay me to plug them. I still have to pay my subscription like everyone else. Well, everyone else who isn't using their family's login, but as my family are for mine. Anyway, not the point. The point is, he's a marketable guy. The million-dollar smile, the great sense of humour. He's Mr. Nice. He's always there to chat. But in the car, he performs. He's always good with the sound bites. You know, he's always good. You get the little clips and the behind-the-scenes stuff. If he doesn't perform, does it damage Formula One as a brand? Does it make Formula One less appealing or less cool?
I don't think it's that big as a... Obviously, it's a big personality in Formula One. And everyone who follows motorsport knows him, but I don't think it's that big to influence the people watching it.
So you think Formula One are still hanging their hats on their big names like your Lewis and people like that?
Yeah, especially now. Obviously, before Lando Norris came up, Ricciardo was the guy that you went for a laugh. You know, Norris did that step ahead now to, you know, he's young and talented and he's funny. And going back to a little bit earlier what you said, if doesn't deliver, I think this could potentially be his last year or last season with Formula One, potentially.
Really? You think this could be the nail in the Danny Ric coffin?
I think yes. It's going to be like Nico Hülkenberg, other, you know, win or go home.
One of those guys that had all of the potential in the world.
Yes.
And then, and got almost a... I think by the time that Nico was leaving, there were a lot of people that were saying, you know, how has this guy lasted as long as he has when he's been almost a progress blocker for other young drivers coming through. So we think it's a good move for Danny Ric. We think it's a good move for McLaren, but overall there is pressure on him there to perform.
Yeah.
Okay. So Danny going there means there's a space at Renault. We've talked about Alonso potentially coming back. We've talked about Seb. Do you think who else do you think could fill that seat?
Lundgren.
Yeah.
Sorry, you go.
No. Sorry, I was just going to say there was talks of him. I can't remember who posted. Someone mentioned it, didn't they, on the WhatsApp group that we have.
I'm sorry, who was that you're talking about?
Lundgren, is it?
Lundgren is from Formula 2. I think he's already one of their junior drivers.
Oh, okay. So
if I'm right.
There's talk that he would be coming up and taking that seat.
Yeah. So let me see. Lundgren. F2. Yeah, Christian Lundgren. Yeah, he's a Danish racing driver. Our Grand Prix, and he has lovely Renault jumpsuit on him in the picture. So
that's the most important thing. He's a man of fashion as well as a man of speed, which is outstanding. Okay, so I have to admit I don't know much about the young man, but it would be exciting to have another young driver come through and make their mark on the sport, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I hope for him there's not going to be like George Russell. For the simple fact, the way I say George Russell is because I think he's in the wrong car at the moment, the wrong time. And as I said earlier, I don't think Renault they're going to be competitive as they were or as they should be, as they're not going to get any extra money from giving engines to other teams. So they might go backwards, but obviously I don't. We'll see.
Okay. So, to cover this off, just in general then, Seb leaving Ferrari, we were a bit shocked. We think it's been a bit disappointing, his time at Ferrari. Yes, a few race wins, but when you put a four-time champ with, the most iconic brand, you expected world championships. It just hasn't happened. We talked about the possibility that he is going to find somewhere to race in Formula One, but it's a very low chance he goes elsewhere. Him leaving Ferrari, we got Carlos Sainz going there. That's a good move for both of them. Danny Ric going to McLaren puts the pressure on both teams, effectively. And that Renault space looks like it's going to be bringing some young blood up from a feeder team. So it's a bit of a seismic shift, actually, when you look at it. And it always seems to happen this way in Formula One, doesn't it? That, it's very rarely one person moves. It's when one person moves and then there's a shuffle. And then there's the new normal, and the new normal tends to last for a few years. I suppose the only exception to that is when Red Bull and Toro Rosso move their drivers around as and when they want to suit their needs. But it certainly is an exciting prospect, isn't it?
It is, and there's going to be things to be seen, I would say.
Okay. So
I was just doing some Googling whilst
I was rambling,
doing this.
Yeah.
And I was just interested because I was thinking, have McLaren ever had an Australian drive for them before? And from what I can see, I don't think they have.
Oh.
So this is new territory in a way.
this is a first. And I'll come back actually to a point that you made, Alex, which is around, I'm pretty sure it was you. Tell me if it wasn't. I'm sorry if it wasn't. But I think it's the point you made, Alex, which is, Lando Norris kind of has taken over as that joker, that quite happy chappy, that laugh, that comedy person. This pairing of Daniel Ricciardo and Lando Norris reminds me a lot of when Jensen and Lewis were both driving for McLaren and they did that tuned cartoon of them. And they were quite the cheeky chappy twosome, weren't they? And I think the marketability of Daniel Ricciardo for McLaren, as I said, the marketability of Seb going to somewhere like Formula E, but certainly the marketability of Daniel Ricciardo going to McLaren, that's got to bring McLaren some kudos points and hopefully some dollar as well, hasn't it?
Surely, I would say so. It's still a big personality within Formula One anyway, and he just partnered with AWS, which at the moment. If people work in ITU, they know AWS is quite big. So it's, you know, it still has sponsors going to him and big money. So I would say so.
So I'm hoping that what we get out of this is some kind of Daniel Ricciardo, Lando Norris going round the world and doing stuff together show. Kind of like, what is it when they do the what's the one with James Corden and him and Jamie Redknapp and Jack Whitehall and other people?
League of Their Own. Own,
when they go off and they do like try other sports. I'd love to see it. It would be absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good, Lando, even though there are people mourning about Lando Norris doing a lot of esports or social media stuff and not concentrating enough on the sports, which, you know, is pretty bad to see that from people, but you find mourners everywhere.
Absolutely. People will always find things to be negative about. So thank you guys. That's been really quite an interesting way. It's nice to start chatting about Formula One with people again, because it's so isolated where we are. Jeez. But we hope that we've given you, the listeners as well, the opportunity to either agree with what we're saying or shout at your headphones or stereo or whatever it is to say that we don't know what we're talking about. But either way, let us know and engage on the social medias. Rich, could you do me a favour and plug our social medias, please, and plug what's going on social media?
Absolutely, sure I can. Really, social medias, best place to get in touch, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of those are at the NRF1. Our website as well, nrf1.uk. Patreon as well, give us a big shout on Patreon. Feel free to go and check out all the content on there, regular podcasts, bonus podcasts as well, which we will be bringing you throughout the season when we're not recording them socially distanced through a clever app on the computer. Patreon is patreon.com/NRF1, patreon.com/NRF1. And our email address, in case people want to email us, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. That's all the places. We should also say what we have started doing. We didn't do it last Friday because I thought it was only suitable being VE Day and everything.
That's fair.
F1 Friday, hashtag F1 Friday. Get it trending. We did it a couple of weeks ago and we were basically comparing and merch and memorabilia and things, and we put pictures up. Even Damon Hill, who got tagged in a couple of pictures, he even liked one of the pictures. So I mean,
how was that for you, Rich? How was that moment in your life?
I've got that screenshot saved on my phone. I'm gonna back it up on the computer, probably have it as a desktop background even, I don't know.
Are you going to print it out and get it framed? The wall.
I could do that.
Yeah, get that hung
I'll
up,
add
mate.
It to
I
the
would,
shrine.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, hopefully he's not listening to this because now it's gone to being creepy. But yeah. So have you got what's it going to be this week? Are we going to? I mean.
So yeah, from the next one, which will be the 22nd, which is obviously of May, is a Friday. Yeah. 22nd of May, we'll be having our next F1 Friday, and I think we'll be discussing, because this is something we discussed on our podcast group, which car or which driver did we have a picture of on our bedroom wall as a kid? Obviously, us and obviously we're sure racing drivers had pictures of who they looked up to and thought, I want to be as good as them. I want to do what they do one day. I mean, for me, obviously, I had a massive poster, which I still have somewhere, of Damon Hill in his 1996 Williams. I think Nathan on the podcast group was talking about having a Ferrari on his wall.
Well, I think he mentioned it, didn't he? Because he said, you know, someone said about potentially Lewis filling Seb's seat. This was in the very early days of speculation. Someone said, oh, no, is Lewis going to go? No, Alex, you said as well, Seb and Lewis might do a swap. And you know, so this, I think it was Nathan made the right point. Actually, if you're a Formula One driver, you probably grew up with a Ferrari on your wall because they are, you know, the Formula One brand. So I think it all stemmed from that, which is an absolutely valid point. Do you know what? I have to say, Rich, I think I had a Damon Hill poster on my wall as well when I was younger.
I saw you one.
I think I did, driving that Williams. But I just, hearing you say that has brought it back to me. I never really had posters until I was sort of much older. And by that point, I was like, oh, you know, because I was a teenager, I didn't think Formula One was cool. Although I now look back and realise that nobody cared what I thought was cool. As is the case with most teenagers. Sorry, teenagers who listen to the show. Is Callum still a teenager? No, he's grown up. Anyway, please edit that out, Rich, because otherwise I'm going to be in serious trouble with Callum when he hears this. No, not for the first time. So, F1 Fridays, guys. Friday the 22nd of May. Get on Formula One. Get onto our socials at the NRF1 and let us know, you know, what drivers did you have on your wall? Were they pictures? Were they posters? Were they backdrops on your computers when you were a kid? You know, I'd go as far as to say almost which driver did you always drive as on the games? You know, who did you always pick? Did you pick the car or did you want to pick the driver? You know, who did you idolise and how did you idolise them? Hashtag F1 Friday at the NRF1. Let's hit it up on the 22nd of May. And let's just start talking Formula One, because the more we talk about it, the more excited we'll be when and if it actually comes back. And let's say when it comes back, let's be positive about it. And anyway, and when it does come back, it will be status quo as we know it. But when it hits in 2021, we will have a whole new driver lineup that we've just talked about. So I just want to say, Rich, Alex, thank you guys for taking the time and for putting up with my poor knowledge of technology. We had an absolute mare. I had a mare trying to get this going, but it's been going. It's been great. I've really loved talking to you guys, and I've really appreciated your time this
evening.
Thank you.
It's been great.
No worries. Well, that's been Rich, that's been Alex, and that's been the NRF1 podcast, episode 262, talking about the upcoming changes for 2021. As I say, hit us up on the social medias, hit us up with the email, and we will speak to you all for hashtag F1 Friday on the 22nd. And in the meantime, if anything big happens on the grid, you will hear it from us, and we will tear it to pieces and put it back together as only the NRF1 can. So, guys, thanks very much for joining me, and we'll see you next time.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.